It is a center for higher learning.
It is a place with centuries of secrets in its shadowed halls.
This is where you have come to learn the mysteries of the cosmos.
Welcome to the Miskatonic University Podcast.
They'll teach you.
Hello, and welcome to the Miskatonic University Podcast, episode 138. This is the podcast dedicated to Call of Cthulhu and other horror and Lovecraft-related role-playing games. I'm Keeper Murph.
I'm Keeper John, and in this episode, we're going back to an old favorite, the bestiary.
Yes, and this time we'll be putting a little bug in your ear about a certain space monster castaway with powers of persuasion.
And we're also going to talk a little bit about vampire jobs, robot school, and what it means for this new era for MUP.
But first, let's take a little trip to the Campus Crier.
Miskatonic University Campus Crier.
Campus Crier is Miskatonic University's student paper. Here's where we go through mythos-related news and feedback to the podcast. This episode was recorded on February 1st, 2018.
First up, we want to mention again that the Miskatonic University podcast is heading into a new phase after kind of a rough winter, but everyone be assured we decided all together as a group that we want to keep this train running, so here's the deal. Over the holiday season, Dan has had a big schedule change that puts him into late evenings and working nights that kind of shook things up for us, and lately it's been harder and harder for him to face more and more computer screen time after being at a job where he basically stares at a screen all day. So one big change is that Dan is taking a step back as the main audio editor for the show.
Yep, and this is actually the first show that we're doing a little experiment and letting some people try it out, but we're looking for solutions and onward and upward.
Yep, absolutely. Moving on, there is a new Kickstarter underway from Stygian Fox. I don't know if you guys saw this yet. It's called The Wild Hunt. It's an ancient, The Wild Hunt is an ancient Celtic myth about the force that rampages through the countryside, killing evildoers and causing havoc. This adventure is a 1920s adventure framed around a hunt that takes the investigators from New York to Boston. There'll be a link in the show notes, so check it out.
That looks great.
That looks really cool, yeah.
Stygian Fox. Yeah, Stygian Fox always does really superior work. I really like their stuff.
Agreed.
Totally.
Chaosium has released a sheaf of stuff for the Miskatonic repository called the Miskatonic Collection, which includes forms, images, play aids, and documents. They can be used for props in your own Call of Cthulhu games, but these are also meant for creators to use in order to spice up submissions to the actual Miskatonic repositories. So forms in the collection from Dean Englehart include Arkham Sanitarium forms, the City of Arkham forms, medical forms, telegrams, etc. The whole list of stuff. And there's also some maps in there from Stephanie McClea.
Awesome.
Nice.
I haven't thumbed through those yet. I hope to do that soon.
Document dump. It's pretty cool.
Yep.
Those are always fun.
Yeah, very cool. Harlem Unbound from Darker Hue Studios is in the hands of backers. So awesome. Congrats for those guys. And the reviews have been excellent. Chris of Darker Hue Studios is putting out a call for anyone. If you if you have contacts in publishing or book distribution, to please get in touch with him. So we'll have a link in the show notes, but reach out and see if you can help spread the word on Harlem Unbound and Darker Hue Studios.
Yeah, the book looks amazing. It's really pretty.
I really want to get a copy of it.
Yeah, we're hoping it'll end up in retail places around. On a related note, Darker Hue Studios officially has launched a Patreon page. So Chris Spivey wrote on the Patreon page, if you like our work and want to help make safe spaces for diverse voices to be heard and want to see diverse creatives making beautiful, engaging, and authentic pieces that feature people of color, please consider backing us. And we'll have a link in the show notes. And it's a fantastic operation, and he's doing kind of groundbreaking stuff for our little corner of this industry.
I like the way that's written. That's really nice.
Yeah, it is, right? Yeah, that's his copy. Yep.
That's good copy. Yeah. Wish we could write copy like that.
Indeed.
Up next, friends of the show, Skype at Cthulhu, posted its first session about 7 years ago now. Jim posted some impressive numbers in a sweet little infographic that he created to celebrate it. And he's got a little blurb here I'm going to read. Since then, we have released 445 actual play sessions with another 22 in the backlog. I have no intention
That's
of slowing
so crazy.
Down. So to celebrate, wow. Here's an infographic showing all 55 exclamation point players we've had over the years and the number of sessions that each were in. The top six, Edwin, Gary, Jim, Jonathan, Max, and Randall are all current regular players, which is pretty cool. Our sincere thanks to each and every one of you who has been a part of Skype at Cthulhu over the years, and our very sincere thanks to the very many listeners we have had and continue to have week after week. And we have a link to that post and a copy of the infographic in the show notes for this show as well. It's pretty impressive, honestly. I'm in the list. I don't know about you guys.
I'm in there. I've run games for them.
You're in there more than I am. I know that much.
I'm in there because of you, John. I think I'm only there because of the Yellow King episode. And speaking of actual play podcasts, I was on the Legends of Tabletop podcast with John Haremza and Oscar Rios and Bill Adcock, playing Cthulhu Invictus with a character that was born during an as-yet-unaired MU podcast AP that we played together with the retired old guys.
Oh, that was so much fun,
though.
Yeah, that
was fun.
Yeah, yeah. So we haven't released that yet, but in the sequel that is now already released, Horatius, the retired grain inspector, which is code for spy in 2nd century Roman Empire, joins Iavolenus, the bodyguard, and Lucius, the centurion, on a trek to a remote village in the Alps. And it's two episodes, and both have been released.
Fantastic.
Links in the show notes.
Cool.
Sweet!
And this episode, we're going to talk about a monster that John has picked. I guess, John, do you want to give us a little intro into what you've got in store?
Yes, the insects from Shagai. So I really like the concept of this creature. I feel like it's another one of these, created by Ramsey Campbell. I feel like it's a really well done alien life form that to me is, well constructed in the way that even the color, from, outer space is a good alien, you know, truly alien life form. And, mm-hmm. And so I'm really attracted to that with the insects of, Shagai. Mm-hmm. And I like how, their story about, migrating really because their home planet was destroyed and they're they're almost like refugees, you know, fleeing and, they get into our solar system. They're, on Uranus for a while and then they finally migrate to the Earth and they want to take over the Earth and enslave all the humans and everything. And I think there's just so much that's interesting about them as an alien race and their motivations and things like that. But when it comes to the gaming table, I have a hard time trying to run these, creatures because, you know, due to the fact that they have, their extraterrene biology, you know, they're not exactly in our plane of existence, so they can pass through solid matter at will, but then they can also interact with solid matter as they so choose. And you know, when they're inside of a host, we don't know it, and during daylight hours, they say that they're sleeping during the day inside your head, and then at nighttime, that's when they kind of take over and start doing the little puppet mastery stuff inside these people. I guess some of the problems that I see with it at a gaming table is that it would be very easy for the player characters to get distracted, especially if the adventure has, if the mystery that they're engaged with has a lot of, a cast of characters, 1,000 characters for them to interact with. And so, oh, are we going to talk to, the diner, the owner of the diner, the waitress and the owner, the cook, or, we're going to talk to the sheriff, are we going to talk to the school teacher, that kind of thing. And they can, your investigation can get derailed quite easily, especially if the player characters get fixated on someone that is a, minor 2-bit, background character that just because the game master used a funny accent, now they feel like this is an important guy. We gotta trail this guy. We gotta follow him. We gotta figure out what he's up to. And they're not paying attention to the, teenagers who are, out late at night and up to mischief because they're actually being controlled by the insects. It's difficult, I think, because it's not an upfront monster that's in your face.
That's
the root of it. Because these are great in a novel. Just, I think it's difficult to transition them from a cool novel to the game table.
I agree with you. I thought about this, and I think that and one way with which to handle this, and you're going to have to stop me. I've kind of brought this up before, but my idea with Insects of Shigai is that because they are so alien, and if we're only speaking of that faction that resides as a parasitic race, right? Because you've got the two factions. One of them's the Azathoth Avatar, Zadah Hagla worshippers, and they just hate everybody. But then there's the other side that's like the sadistic hedonists that want to just discover new things, and those are the ones that are parasitically infesting people, right? So if we just talk about that side of them, and what I imagine as a keeper you could do is essentially construct two separate scenarios that are very, very, very similar. So you have each of them is half a game. The first scenario would be a beginning and a middle, and then the second scenario would be the middle and an end. But what happens is you have the players go through, starting through, and then they get to the middle, and then an event happens. Either they become aware of somehow that their things are different. And the easiest way to do that is in the second half, you have them revisit things that they did in the first half, but everything is different. Like, so they met NPC A in the first beginning and they gave him answer A, but then when they revisit him in the second half, he doesn't know them at all, or he gives completely different answers to what they thought he had said previously, right?
Right. So you establish a baseline.
Right. And then you just completely jack with their heads,
Right.
And because the players, obviously to the keeper, are already infested, right? They are parasitic hosts for the Shigai that have already infested their brainstems and whatnot. So the end game in that scenario would be, okay, obviously we're being controlled. What is the way out? And you're basically forcing them into either trepanation or some other horrific means of removing this parasite from their own bodies, right? Which is not going to be a fun task because they infect the nervous system and brain stem typically, or brain in general. But so that's one thing that I thought that you could do in order to get it, in order to bring them into the game without actually having to bring them into the game. That way they're there, but they're not something you physically have to deal with. Does that make sense, John? So you don't have to worry about how they can transmute matter, and they can, they can fly through planes of existence that we don't normally see, and they can hold three trains of thoughts at one time because they have the 6-lobed brain. And you don't have to worry about any of that,
Yeah, I like that. So that would work really well if you had a campaign too, because you could go to Podunk, you know, New Jersey and have a scenario. And then when you go back, the NPCs that were your allies now have an accent or whatever is the new.
Right. Whatever's different. And the thing to remember here is that you just have to change certain things. You don't have to make it completely wholly different. You just have to change the important details that make, you know, you have to figure out what the Shagai would want, or the Shan would rather, would want, to cover up. Essentially, that's what this would be, is they're altering the player's memories or perceptions of reality in order to keep something hidden. So you want to try and change the game just enough to where those things are obvious, but yet not so obvious that it's like, how would I even not realize? You know what I mean? So you can't like have them go to the town in New Jersey and now all of a sudden everyone's speaking Belgian or something. You know what I mean? That would just be insane. But
sure.
Could just change little details here and there that make a huge difference once you add them all up into the end game.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, you know, part of the issue with that issue is that you can sidestep it and not have the mystery be, you know, Shan, who's got the Shan. Like, it doesn't have to be a clue trail that's all about trying to detect who's different. You could actually just lean into the fact that this person is different and everyone knows it. I know of one scenario by Scott Dorwood where it's not the Shan, so I'm not giving anything away, but there's a family member that's really obviously off. And the issue is not, like, try to discover who is off. The issue is everybody else is trying to act like it's cool. No problem. Like, they're all in actual denial, you know, and as someone with sort of mental health issues might be in real life, and just kind of, oh no, we're just kind of sort of adapted to this behavior, and you know, we don't love it, but we do what we can. And then you might have somebody breaking down through that barrier. I can't stand it anymore. Those changes could be actually just out in front and lean into it instead of trying to make it like a role-playing challenge where
right.
one time they visit an NPC is different than another. I mean, it's one way to sidestep it.
Yeah, that's actually because I've been thinking about this since I was trying to formulate this, and I was almost, you know, I was trying to answer my own question, and something that I was thinking about is very much like that, because the root problem, as I think of it, is that, you know, if a game master tries to hide the Shan, every one of the NPCs that the player characters are encountering are going to seem very similar. And where the game master may think that he's, putting out these really obvious clues, I know from experience, there's plenty of times I'll put out what I think is an obvious clue and the player characters just skim right over it, you know, because they're already focused on something else. So the thing that I started thinking about, I actually kind of started thinking about, a movie in how maybe to try and bring elements of that to the game table was, John Travolta film Phenomenon. Where he suddenly, you know, has, special abilities, limited, telekinesis. He's got, precognition, you know, that kind of thing. And so what would it be like if, you know, and it's interesting because that movie is it's set in a small town, you know, and suddenly, you know, just one of the average Joes in the town is gifted with these powers, hyper intelligence. You know, he's solving equations for, you know, the jet propulsion laboratories and, you know,
right.
just all this crazy stuff. And what would it be like if, you know, say, what if, a local, you know, town, priest suddenly overnight became a healing priest? You know, he's mm-hmm. able to
right.
to do legit miracle healings, you know? And so that kind of thing, you know, and because of the daytime, you know, if you follow what the books are suggesting on how to run the creatures, you know, during the daytime, these creatures are asleep. During the daytime, the humans with these Shan in them, they may really go, oh my God, I've been touched by God. I have these special powers, you know, and they're going to try and do everything that they can. And then at night, you know, they're doing other things as well. I was also thinking it might be neat if there was, other visual or physical side effects. And it could be subtle things like anybody who has, a Shan has, brown eyes or maybe just really crystal clear blue eyes or something, you know, but I was thinking something more subtle as brown because it might get to a point where some people are like, oh, I remember seeing a photograph of this person and she had green eyes last year, you know, and now she has brown eyes. How'd that happen? Right.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
That kind of thing, or, you know, moles or, you know, whatever. But, yeah, I was trying to think of something like that. So it's interesting that you brought that up about just kind of leaning into it. Cause I was already kind of thinking about that.
Well, I think you can if you wanted to not have it be too mysterious who the Shan are, you could use other NPCs. Cause the people who are closest to the afflicted are going to be the ones who are dealing with it in some way. And either they're going to be repressing or they're going to be, coming to you as helpers. I mean, it's kind of an easy plot hook, right? As you show up to a strange place and say, yeah, everything's not fine. I mean, maybe you have an encounter with the NPC and you don't detect what's different because you're not close enough to that NPC to know. But the child comes to you and says, Daddy's weird. He's doing weird stuff. I don't, you know, and then you got to evaluate, like, is the kid weird? You know, it becomes a little bit of a mystery that you can investigate.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing I was thinking of is, we have the Massa de Requiem per Shagai,
The
Requiem for Shagai written, which is the strange opera that was written by Benevento Cieri Bordigeri in the 18th century, right? This is supposedly an opera that, this guy wrote that follows the flight of the Shan through space and time, eventually ending with their arrival on Earth in the 17th century, right? This particular opera, according to, you know, Ramsay and others, was banned by Pope Clement XIII in the 18th century. And then his successor, which I think would have been actually Clement XIV, imprisoned Bordighera and branded him a heretic, and they tried to destroy all of the copies of this particular opera. So I thought, well, we could do this in a different way and have it as, instead of having the Shan again physically in the game, you could make this just a different time frame and shift this back to the 18th century where you're all working for the papacy to try and track down these particular copies of the opera itself. You know, and you could just go through that and you could structure this just like any other normal adventure where nothing crazy has to happen because this isn't, you're not actually up against the Shagai, but maybe you accidentally have the opportunity to like, invoke, Baal-Zikamog or something, you know, the great old one from Shagai, that fled with the Shan, if you're not careful, you know what I mean? Something horrible like that might happen. Or maybe the Shan become aware of you if you screw up too terribly in the game. But I thought that would be a neat, counterpoint. Instead of doing it in the 20s, you could kind of put a twist on it and make it really heavily Roman Catholic in the 18th century. Mm. And then have you all investigators for the church trying to track down, you know, almost Inquisition style track down, these copies of this opera that's been banned. So that was another neat idea.
That is an amazing scenario seed, and I could see it fitting into like a Masks campaign that's a flashback episode, or even a Horror on the Orient Express campaign as a flashback episode where, you know, the opera is brought up, and that's That's freaking cool. I like that.
That is cool. And I like the idea of sort of not going directly, doing the indirect thing. You know, there's only a very few, at least according to the YSDC wiki, there aren't that many scenarios that use the Shan. And one of them, I know, I'm just not going to spoil things, but one of them really leans into using that piece of music. The other one I don't know very well, but it takes, I think it is medieval. So I'm wondering if there is, let's see. Oh yeah, no, it's like right around the time that they arrive, takes place in Spain. I guess it's not, in the 16th century. So there's kind of, there might be something there to check out that to dovetail too.
Yeah, it'd be that idea. I mean, and you could take that different aspects of that as well. So you could structure it more like, The King in Yellow, to where instead of the play, it's the opera that's driving.
It's kind of, it seems like it's inspired by that, right?
It seems very heavily inspired by that.
Right.
So, I mean, you could just do it in that route, but I thought it would be better because nobody does, you know, papacy games, you know what I mean? That doesn't come up very often. So it'd be neat if everybody was a Jesuit priest or a Benedictine monk or something like that, and they're all just working for the papacy to try and track down these different copies of the opera that have floated up around, or maybe you're working for the papacy to track down Bodegara, as he's on the run because he knows that he's screwed up at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know what just occurred to me is in the Ramsey Campbell story where this is born, he makes this little reference to Matthew Hopkins going into those woods where the meteor came down and eventually executing everyone that's in a witch cult that decides instead of worshiping the devil, they're going to worship essentially the Shan or that cone thing that, that they're trapped on Earth in. And,
their vehicle.
Yeah. So, you know, Matthew Hopkins is early 17th century. I mean, you've got a lot there that you can kind of,
you've got a whole time frame there that you can just kind of mess with. And with the release of Reign of Terror, that opens up a whole new, you know, aspect of that century that we haven't previously had. Granted, it's in France and not in Italy, but it shouldn't be that big of a difference to shift it slightly. You could use that as well, or you could just place it in France and use the Reign of Terror rules in general. I mean, it's not that far out.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah. I like it. The other thing I love about these guys is the whole six-lobed brain thing.
Yeah, the six-lobed brain is pretty crazy.
I don't know if you guys have ideas for how to lean into that one, but it makes me think of, that you can do a whole thematic thing here with multiple personalities. And one of the things, do you remember hearing Da Vinci? I'm totally sure that it's a myth, but that Da Vinci could write two different scripts at the same time with each hand.
I had heard that. Yeah. With each hand he could write.
Right.
Yeah. Clearly.
And
there
is a, right. I mean, who knows, but it unlikely, but there is an operation that they do on, people who have very serious grand mal seizures. And one of the things they can do is cut the connection between the two halves of the brain. So when they do that, I've seen videos of people who have to kind of learn how to operate with two brains in the same body because
that's a form of lobotomy.
Yeah. Well, they're perfectly fine otherwise, but each hand will have a life of its own and will like one hand will be buttoning up a shirt and the other one will be unbuttoning. Like it's got different agendas. And so these things have six and they're Shan lobes, but you imagine that would affect a human pretty weirdly as they try to figure out how to adapt to this new presence. So, you know, that's another thing that you can detect maybe as a clue is just that, one person could be doing contradictory things.
You could you know, kind of going back to the phenomenon movie that I was kind of referencing, cause that character, you know, was reading books at a voracious speed reading rate, learning new languages, learning new skills just by reading books, you know, and I mean, that could be, I think you could illustrate it that way too, where just yesterday, you know, you didn't know anything, but now today you're speaking in Spanish and you're doing sign language, and you're doing advanced calculus, you know.
Or maybe the player doesn't even realize it, and just the other players catch the fact that they have eyes like a chameleon now, where all of a sudden they're like so crazily cross-eyed, like one eye is looking at you and the other eye is looking down the hallway. You know what I mean? Like right. Obscenely off. And then once you talk to them, the other eye swivels back towards you, you know, and they don't even know that it's happening, but that one side of their brain is off doing its own thing while this other side is actually focused on you. And every once in a while, they both focus on you and the eyeballs come back into line, you know, but then maybe the left eye wanders off next and starts staring at the ground or something, or the guy who walks in the door, but then it comes back ahead, you know, towards you again every once in a while. And so maybe the other players would pick up on it that way, as opposed to like, hey, he was normal yesterday, but today his eyes are all over the dang place.
Right. Yep. That's pretty creepy.
That is creepy.
I like that. And those are things you could plant early without explanation, and then later find evidence in written form or whatever that, you know, oh, they have six lobes. And
exactly. And it's something you could do to a player without actually having to do anything to the player or clear with the player ahead of time. So you can, you know what I mean? So in that scenario, you would just say that this happens. Like the other player, hey, you're looking at John, and John's left eye is just off on the kilter there. Staring at, oh, and now it swings in and his right eye is looking at the ceiling. Like, what the hell is going on?
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's good.
And you don't actually have to have John be a party to that. In his case, he seems everything is normal. But, you know, when you're relaying it to whoever else is playing, they would see, okay, something is wrong with John. But John has no idea that there's anything wrong with John.
Right. That is a tough one to do. I've seen that before, like in a fantasy game where somebody becomes a werewolf but doesn't know it, or, you know, something like that. It's a really awesome trick if you can pull it off.
Yeah,
it's hard to write, I think.
It is really hard to write. I did it a couple of times for, when I ran for, White Wolf Systems.
And that sounds like a White Wolf thing.
Yeah, in different scenarios. Well, it does, doesn't it? But I did it a couple of times where we had a guy literally turned into a werewolf and had no idea that he was a werewolf. And so I went to great lengths to make him think that he was doing something with the group, but it turns out that everything that he did just didn't happen. It was him in like a dream state following the player characters around, while his actual body had transformed into this murderous werewolf that the other players were chasing after. His like astral form, if we want to call it that, was following the players and interacting. He thought he was interacting with the players, but it was just in his mind that they were interacting with him. But in reality, the other players never knew he was there because he was missing, right? Because he's actually the werewolf. So it took a little planning to get it. To get it worked out right, but it went off really well. We had a lot of fun, and the guy who was the werewolf, he didn't know he was a werewolf, but the other players did. So I will caveat that. So they realized what was in, because I couldn't pull it off any other way. At least I couldn't think of how to do it at that time. So I let everyone else in the group realize that, okay, he's the guy. Just when he starts talking to you at this point, you just don't acknowledge him. Right. And so whenever it came back to the point, whenever he woke up the next day and he's covered in blood and guts and, you know, his stomach's all distended because he just ate a cow or a person or whatever. Then it kind of clicks on him and, but I was with you. And like, no, you weren't with you. You know what I mean? And it kind of just, it was a game I made to screw with one guy is basically what it was, but it came off really well.
Nice.
Well done, sir. Well done.
There's another pretty cool use of the Shan in Delta Green that I have to give a hat tip to Brett because I didn't know about this. The Army of the Third Eye. You guys ever heard of this?
Oh, I have not.
No, neither.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. I'm dropping dropping this in the show notes. If you guys want to open the Army of Third Eye thing, the thing is, I haven't thoroughly read, but it's a pretty cool, kind of crazy cult that is a Luddite cult that is sort of against technology and is fighting against, people involved in the defense and aerospace industries. But they're also involved in kidnapping scientists and technicians. And so it turns out that they're basically kind of informed by the Shan through a proxy. And, I don't know. It's a pretty cool take. So you've got a whole cult that's kind of anti-technology, and yet because they're the Shan, they're sort of, after it as well. I don't know. I like it. So. I like the paranoia of it.
I do also like the fact that the guy performed a self-trepanation.
Yeah, that's you've seen the movie Pi, right?
Oh yeah. Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
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 That's more of a self-lobotomy though.
It was. That was right through the third eye, right?
Yeah, that was not a good. Well, it was temporal lobe, wasn't it? He went through the side with the drill, wasn't it, or was it straight in the center?
Oh, did he? I'm now not remembering.
I don't
even
know. But either way, I remember it was a drill to the head, and that's enough.
Yeah, but I was gonna say, cult wise, the Matthew Hopkins thing. What if he didn't destroy the witch cult, and that could bring those worshippers all the way forward in a lineage to modern day, if you wanted, or. You could go to the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like it's saying that Hopkins wiped them out, but we don't know that.
You could easily do the any of the witch hunts of the Inquisition.
Sure.
Any period, basically.
You're right.
You know, could easily plausibly be linked back to this particular thing.
Yep. Do the 1690s one in Mass, or you could do the earlier one, and I think it's 1630s in New England.
You could do the one in England in, Ribble Valley, the crazy one. And, you know, it all falls within
the
same.
Well, that is Hopkins, right?
Is that Hopkins? I have a book.
Oh boy, I don't know.
It's too far away for me to reach.
Well, he's 17th century for sure, so like he died in 1647.
Yeah, it's too far away for me to, yeah, I think that's the right one, but either way, it's 15 feet behind me, I can't reach it. I mean, you could do that. You could go the other route and put it in, make them like, infesting like Lord Sandwich in the Hellfire Club. You know?
Yes. I definitely want a Lord Sandwich scenario. Absolutely. Somebody bring me a.
Come on. That. Now. I'm not joking when I say that. I mean.
No, I love it. I love
okay,
it.
Okay. All right. I'm just it. Making sure because you said that like I was an idiot, but.
No.
It's the same. Murph, it's the same voice. Come on now.
That's true. I only have the one voice. That's the one voice of judgment.
It's true. He does.
It's true.
The one trick pony.
Oh God. Everybody who knows me just rolled their eyes. That sucks.
That's why you lose people so quickly. Cause they always think you're judging them.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Now I'm crying.
You should be. Yeah. We can tell. We can hear it in your voice. It's so funny.
Oh my.
Oh my gosh! Okay.
Actually, I was thinking of a. Unless you had more on the sandwich, I thought of a cult.
I'd like some lettuce on that sandwich.
Unless
exactly.
You had more on the sandwich. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
Can we hold the Earl of Onion, please?
If I remember what I read on the insects from Chagai, there was actually a finite number of the insects were aboard the ship that transported to the Earth, and so their numbers are low. Like, isn't it? It's just a few of them are here.
No, there was multiple of these triangular temples to Azathoth.
Cones.
There were teleportation temples of Azathoth.
Okay, right? I guess I was under the impression it was just the one that landed in the Goatswood, and so from that perspective, I was thinking that they would want to start a cult that would propagate their species, and so. You know how we've got snake handling religion?
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
What if they started up a bee handling religion? Because they might view bees as like a primitive form of themselves and want to do something to help elevate them to a larger life form.
So playing off of that. We make a modern day scenario where people who have been the same group is now the leading proponent behind the reformation of pesticide use and high energy power lines.
Oh, the whole bee loss.
Yeah, to
thing.
Get
yeah,
rid
man.
Of the bee decimation that's been going on for the last 15 or 20 years.
Yeah.
So now the actual insects of Shigai are actually working for, the preservation
like
of
the
bees
organic.
And environmental reasons.
Well,
You know how
there have been incidents where entire bee farms have been destroyed?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the work of Delta Green. Because those bee farms were in the process of being migrated and evolutionized upward to becoming Shan, and Delta Green had to go in there and take care of business.
Yep. And so the next stage is now that we have that, we have a scenario where the players are actually having to work with the Shan in order to stop Delta Green from killing off the planet by destroying all of the bee population.
Yeah,
I love so much going back to when Africanized bees were sort of the killer bee movies.
Yes. Growing up in Texas, we were mortified by that.
Oh my god.
Right.
We had killer bees warnings come up every other day.
Yeah. Well, don't you think maybe during the fall of Delta Green, which is in the 70s, something might have happened? Like, think of a campaign that goes all the way from the Shan sort of breeding these things all the way up through.
Oh, yeah. They were clearly doing that in Central America and migrating it northward easily.
I love that so much. A campaign where you're fighting bees.
A campaign where the players actually have to swap sides at the end in order to stop Delta Green.
That's another thing, man. I mean, that's not what you said, but when you say swap sides, it made me think of having the solution to a problem be to join with the Shan.
Exactly.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Well, I freaking love that because it's such a cost. You'd have to figure out like which player goes, you know, and then you've got all the internal stuff, which is really because of the way Campbell wrote the story. It's the internal stuff that's really, the meat of this thing, like what it's like to have something crawling inside your brain, which doesn't have nerves. So it must mean some sort of psychic crawling through synapses and thoughts and whatnot. Like that whole thing. If you don't have that, you're sort of missing, you're just watching a black box from the outside.
For it to interact, even though it's a trans-dimensional being, it has to interact with matter. It has to become part of our dimension, right? So it has to have a physical form in order to interact with our brain. So even though it could like live within our head, it takes up space at some point whenever it has to prod that little part of our head. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that has to take up space, which adds pressure. So, I mean, if you just being infected, everyone with a migraine who has history of migraines, those are people there's a 70% chance that guy's got Shan. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because there's no other reason. Like, normal people don't get migraines, but by design, right? It's just that since the 17th century that migraines have become a thing. And now it seems like those are more and more proclivity, you know, and it just boils down to the fact that they're increasing the pressure within the cranium.
Yeah.
This is an aside, but again, through this week, as I've been thinking about the Shan, I had this little image in my head of two infected people, you know, being at that moment, you know, puppet mastered by the Shan. And so the Shan want to have a meeting and speak to each other. And so they walk their little meat puppets up to each other. And as they're standing facing each other, they force them to open up their mouths. And so this large insect kind of crawls out just to the edge of the mouth, like they're out on a balcony, of a building or something. And so these two open jaws with bugs sticking out of them are kind of speaking to each other. They're like, okay, Bill, all right, I'll see you later. And then they crawl back inside and the jaw shuts and the lights turn back on inside the guy's head as the Shan starts driving that body around again.
Awesome.
But what if it's a community like Dark City where everyone in the community is actually infected? And at one point in the day, everyone just shuts down. And the Shans become active in the same format that John just described. So, like, everything stops in the town, everyone's jaws open, and everyone's Shans crawls out while they just do the normal thing. And then they all crawl back in 18 minutes later, clocks all reset, everything's reset, and they just go about their business.
I like that very much. I like the one of these scenarios. There's only three that are in that YSDC list. I think there's more, but that are not listed. But one of them is a kind of like town in a bubble. And I mean, there's a whole genre, right? You've got the Truman Show. You've got the Stepford Wives. You've got, I think there's actually something called Bubble that was filmed in 3D. But I just love Twin Peaks to some degree, but like everybody's kind of in on it. Everybody's like this little kind of cozy town and everybody's, what's the British one with the white ball?
The Prisoner?
The Prisoner!
Oh, yeah. Gosh, yeah.
Just like, you could do any kind of those genre things, mm-hmm. Where the gig is that everybody's.
If we go down that road, then you could just basically remake any David Lynch film.
Sure.
Yeah.
And just say the Shan did it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and Blue Velvet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Shan.
And going with John's little like open mouth conversation situation is kind of like a Cronenberg out of there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I love it. I think we should do it. We won't, but I think we should.
I would like a town in North Africa, a la Naked Lunch, that is like this, and it's a one shot where.
Oh my God, I'm in love with it already.
You show up and you slowly discover that you're not going to be able to leave because nobody leaves.
Can we also have a point in that game at some point where we just spend 30 or 45 minutes speaking to our own big toe?
Yeah.
Because, yes. I mean, come on.
Yep. And
we're going to go burrow as we go hard.
Sure. And you'll have to figure out how to use black noise in order to get inside everyone's head as a weapon.
It'll be great. All right. I think that's good for today, guys. What do we look like on the time?
Right in an
hour.
We
look great. Are there other points? We are at a minute and 34 seconds left, but, you know, like, let's not. John, do you have anything else you want to?
No, I think that really was helpful because I honestly had questions about how would I use the Shan in an adventure, because again, I feel like it's a monster that is amazing in a literary form when you're reading it, but very difficult to bring that experience from the novel to the game table, and this conversation helped.
We want to hear from our listeners, and we have a lot of ways you can reach out to us.
For the complete list, check out our show notes. That's where you'll find our email address, which is now mup.feedback@gmail.com, as well as the phone number, the SpeakPipe link, and our forums.
Send us your questions, feedback, and topic ideas, or join a discussion. Record a liner, tell us who you are, and give us a hearty Go Pods for our home team, the Fightin' Cephalopods. You can find all the links you need to keep in touch at mu-podcast.com/138.
Thank you for joining us for another episode. Class is dismissed.
The Call of Cthulhu role-playing game is property of Chaosium, Inc. The written works of H.P. Lovecraft are held in the United States public domain. All other works mentioned in this podcast are the property of their respective owners. Original content of this show is copyright of the Miskatonic University Podcast under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike license.
This episode of the Miskatonic University Podcast was edited by Max of Skype of Cthulhu fame, a former guest host of the show who is also known as Mahafa on the MU forums.
Yes, Ricky, assemble the super science team.
Yes, Doctor.
Yeah, that guy. A huge and heartfelt thanks goes out to Max for stepping up and taking on some of the workload here. Much appreciated, man.
And on that note, I'd like to just say thank you, Dan. He couldn't be here tonight because he's doing a shift change right now or whatever, it doesn't really matter, but Dan has helmed this thing for 5 years now, and I know me and the other guys here owe him more than we could ever repay for doing the edit for that long. And as the people are fixing to find out, editing this show, and this is a really tight show, today at least it was, is a Herculean effort to do this on a regular basis. So thank you, Dan, for all that you have done over the years for us, and we hope you're on the next show, man.
Absolutely, yeah. Your presence was missed in this episode as we try and begin this new era of MUP, and really, it's just an era where we're going to try and be a little more concise, a little tighter, a little better managed, and we're going to share the burden of editing. And so we've got some great volunteers to help us out with that. But yes, Dan, you were very much missed tonight. So look forward to seeing you next episode.
Yeah, agreed. I just want to underscore that. Thanks for kind of founding this thing and driving it forward. And I know in my life it's made, it's made a huge difference in my life. And it's brought these four friends together, and I'm eternally grateful. I don't know if we can use this. I'm too, I've lost it, guys.
You've gone all flimmy on us. What's
I have. I know, I'm sorry. It's like, I don't know where it came from.
We need to remember, Dan is not stepping away. He's not leaving the
show. No, I'm not saying goodbye.
No, why are you're making it sound like he's leaving. He's not gone.
I'm not. I'm just being grateful, man. Give me some slack.
God, you're going to scare everybody, though.
Yeah, I don't know how to edit that. Thank you, Dan. I don't know. We can leave it in.
It is real.
I love
we
you,
should
man.
Leave it. I agree.
And I really appreciate everything you've done.
Yeah, for sure.
So thanks. Yeah, that was weird.
All right. Good.
That's perfect. Let's stop.
Yep, stopping now.
Yep.
That is supremely serendipitous.
And I'm Keeper John, and in this episode, we're going to go back to an old favorite. Favorite?
Favorite? It's live. Yep.
All right. Here we go.
Oh, my God.
7 years.
Oh.
What, Chad?
No, I didn't see. I thought that I...
And from the top. 3, 2, 1. Skype Cthulhu.
Okay.
Fantastic. Keep going.
I like it.
Okay.
You're killing me.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Can I go or you go? What do you want to do?
No, I like to take turns. Max, man, could you please cut that out? Because it's in your hands now. and just be merciful. Just a little message to Max. Can we all just pray to Max?
We love you, Max.